Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fowen.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fowentes. Star Fowentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfowentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fowentes.
Welcome, everybody. I want to remind you that on the half hour and after, we'll be taking questions. Our number is 646-716-9663. 646-716-9663. And this evening, I am pleased to have with me Diane Ely. And Diane Ely is a master of creativity and a master of money. She has a great story, great energy. And welcome, Diane.
Thank you very much, Star. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Now, tell me about your latest book.
Well, you've asked one of my favorite questions. My latest book is Your Creative Soul, and that's a book that takes creativity to quite a different level than what we've looked at it before. It takes it to the soul level, which I think is the origin of our creative energy in our lives. And it we talk about in that book, in Your Creative Soul, how to get yourself aligned with that energy and what that's all about. It's a wonderful book. It's a lot of fun. I've even got one chapter in there on the importance of laughter in the creative process.
I think laughter is very important, and I've done some laughter yoga, which is very interesting. So tell me a little bit about my creativity. I know that there's emotional creativity, and I have a lot of mental, intellectual creativity. I'm not so creative when it comes to playing, but spiritually I'm pretty creative. So what's the difference in the normal, the way we see creativity normally, and the way we envision, perceive soul creativity?
Well, I think it's a matter of just different, vibrational frequencies, that I really think all creativity is sourced at the soul level. And then essentially when we as humans download that creative energy, we can choose to manifest that in lots and lots of different ways. We can do it in tangible ways. We can do that in intangible ways. A lot of women's creativity gets expressed intangibly. For example, a whole sense of a family exists because of women's distinctive creative process. And that's an intangible way. The whole thing we call corporate culture is really about the creation of family or community within an organization, and that takes a tremendous amount of creative energy. We tend to not notice that as creativity as an expression of creativity, but it really is. And one of the most important things is to begin to acknowledge how you as a person are creative now and begin to expand and build on that as you acknowledge it. Creativity is like anything else. Likes to be acknowledged, likes to be honored, likes to be nurtured. And the easiest way to do that is begin to notice, you know, how are you creative? Do you like to make things? Do you go more in the tangible route? Or are you really good at the intangible?
Oh, you know, that's really interesting because, you know, I have about 300-400 cookbooks, and I read a cookbook from beginning to end, and I very rarely go back and access the recipe, but when I go in the kitchen, I get very creative. But the knowledge of what spices, what herbs, what styles there are to cook something comes from reading those cookbooks. But very rarely will you see me with a cookbook with a recipe open. I will be in the kitchen putting those styles together, and someone said to me, "You're a very good cook." And I said, "No, I'm very creative. You know,
right.
My food tastes good." So that's kind of an intangible way that has tangible results.
Right, that's well put. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm real big on honoring that kind of creativity.
But let's look at the opposite of that. And I want to look at bored. People tell me, "Oh, my God, I'm so bored. Oh, my God, I have nothing to do with my life. Oh, God." And they're whining this whine. And they're telling me bored. They're telling me that there's such a high vibration that nothing stimulates them, or that there's such a low vibration that nothing stimulates them. How can some of us be so creative, and how can people not acknowledge, just even to have a conversation, you use creativity? So what is this with people identifying parts of their being as being bored and not seeing, like you see, to create a family, to create community, to have a conversation? You all have to be creative. What do you think this is?
Well, I think we have some real powerful misconceptions in this culture about what creativity is. And one of those is that it's got to result in a book, a painting, a sculpture, a piece of music, something in what we have traditionally called the creative arts. And that overlooks the creative life. And that's really unfortunate, because then people think, well, you know, I'm not making something that's creative. I'm not making something tangible. I can't go out and put a price tag on it and sell it. So it must not be creative. So that's one of the things that feeds into that. One of the other things is that creative people often have a reputation for being a bit, shall we say, eccentric.
Now, or like starving artists, not grounded.
Right. Yeah, or yes, if I pursue my creativity, then, yeah, I'm going to be poor, I'm going to starve, and so on. And, of course, we know about how our belief systems will fulfill themselves for us. But in that creative realm, it's so important to really begin to expand how we think about creativity and how we conceptualize it and how we see it applied in our lives. You know, I was laughing when you were talking about, you know, what do we do with the bored people? I remember years ago when I was teaching in the public schools, it was very popular for teenagers, and I think it still is very popular for teenagers to say, "I'm so bored." You know, it was kind of in to be bored. And so I put a huge sign up in the front of my room, "Bored people are boring." And that put an end to that. And they began to then expand and explore, what can I do to rupture this boredom? I'm responsible for my boredom if I'm really bored. So what can I do about that? And obviously, you can start to play with a lot of different creative things. And if you don't know where to start, take a class that's in a traditional area. Take a writing class an art class, anything to get those juices going, because we all have them. It is human nature to be creative. The bored person who digs in their heels and insists they're not creative is going against human nature.
remember in the 60s, we would, well, I'm almost 75 years old, so I remember in the 60s, after dinner, we'd sit around and have creative conversation. You know, what's going on with world peace? What's going on with war? We think, we talk about ideas. How can we garden? How can we, you know, we'd have conversations. We'd play musical instruments. We'd tell stories. And there was the advent of TV and computers and stuff. There's so many pieces of technology that do so many things for you that we have to really, really notch up our energy to be creative. Would I have to write a letter in the 60s and send it to 3 people? It took me 2 hours to write the letter, copy it, send it to 3 people, mail it, post it, you know. Now I can send 5,000 people the same letter in the minimum amount of time that it takes to type me. To type it and press my, you know, send to my list. So now our creativity has to be more acknowledged and it has to be up there a bunch of notches. So what do you think? Has the technology given us a gazillion new ways to be creative, or has it stifled some of our creativity?
Well, yeah, again, that's a great question. I can remember also the days before PCs and writing academic papers, and including dissertations on a typewriter. And people saying, oh, wait till you get your first computer. It's going to enable you to be so creative and so on. And I couldn't see that at all. Initially, I just thought, how can a piece of technology that I may or may not be able to relate to free up my creativity? But I saw that it did, because I didn't worry about making mistakes, didn't worry about retyping, didn't have to do any of that kind of thing. So in that sense, that inner voice that would get going as I would write and essentially be, in some cases, telling me what to write, was much freer to go in lots of different directions. What I think we are challenged about with the kinds of massive and fast communication that we have now via technology, I think what we're challenged with is keeping the feeling content there to make a real connection. You know, a head connection is one thing, but a feeling connection is much more profound. Mm-hmm. And that's the tricky part, I think, with all the technology.
It is, you know, and there is a very, very fine line between healing and education. And I've seen, you know, the 8-9-year-olds get on and Google and research 13 sites for, you know, Columbus landing, you know, America, and, you know, with the spell check, and, you know, I do brain mapping on a piece of software and all sorts of wonderful things. Still, as creative as I am and author of so many books and, you know, all these things, I still strive to be more educated, to be more creative, to raise my vibration. And at my age, I attempt to get a certification every year in something different. And I really stop being creative. And when you stop educating yourself, this is when you get old. So are there any studies and research about the use of creativity and the stagnation, aging of the body, or the lack of use of creativity?
Yes, and I don't know of any research in that area. It seems as if a lot of researchers still tiptoe around the word creativity. I just read an extensive article in Time magazine about teaching language starting at the elementary level in Utah. And it's an intensive program where these kids, essentially the parents pick a language for the kids, and it might be Mandarin Chinese, it might be French, German, Spanish, Italian, whatever. They've got a whole raft of languages. And half of the day is spent speaking English, half the day is spent in this foreign language. It's an immersion-type program. And the article contained a lot of research on what learning a language and being bilingual, particularly from the age of about 5 or 6 on, does to the brain. And the research showed it made the brain more flexible, you had clearer access to decision-making processes in the brain and lots of things like that. And really what they were describing was somebody who uses and has a very creative brain. But the word creativity was not used in that article once. So I think we're...
How did this word get such a typical area? How did it get those people being researchers being afraid to use it? What do you think?
Well, I think that some of it still goes back to, beliefs in, if I'm highly creative, then that means I'm going to be highly weird. And I'm not so sure I want that. I want to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of it, is, again, some real misconceptions about what it means to be creative. You know, there used to be a conference held every year, and I don't know who sponsored it, so if you're listening, hang in there. And the name of the conference was Creativity and Madness.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Creativity and Madness.
It makes me hold my breath. Hey, what is the name of your book, and where can I buy it?
Your Creative Soul. You can buy it at the publisher's website, which is gatherinsight.com, or you can go to my website, and it'll link you through. And my website is my full name, which is the first letter C, and Diane, D-I-A-N-E, and my last name is E-A-L-Y. So there's a double E in there. So it's cdianeely.com.
Cool.
It was so much fun to write that book. And I felt so aligned and so close to my own creative soul. It really was having my best friend sitting there with me. It was great.
I am sure I'm going to pick up a copy in the next couple of weeks and look deeply into it. So what do you think? You've written 5, 6 books now, or what?
Yeah, 5.
5 books, and you also have a healing modality. I'm not sure I remember the name. What is that?
I do, and the name of the healing modality is physiohalanics.
Oh, my God, can you explain that to me?
I know. Years ago, I put all the pieces to physiohalanics together back in the late 80s, when, again, energy healing was still a pretty weird thing to do. And I just call it the energy balancing because I didn't know what else to call it. Well, after a few years into the early 90s, more and more people were doing energy balancing. So a friend of mine said, we got to come up with a name for what you've come up with here because this is a whole new modality. So we got the dictionary out, and I had always described this modality as natural healing. So we just looked for the Greek word meaning natural, which is physio, P-H-Y-S-I-O, and the old English word for healer is helan, H-E-L-A-N. So it became physiohalanics.
Now, do I understand that you have another Sunday Activity?
I do. The very first book that I wrote and had published was The Woman's Book of Creativity.
Well, I think I've read that, and I think that it has a place on my reference shelf somewhere. And,
it could be.
And how many years ago was that?
That was first published in 1995.
So you've had almost 20 years to refine your understanding and your connection to creativity to come out with the Your Creative Soul book, and you got to base new information on all that old information. So creativity is not a new topic for you. You just didn't wake up one day and say, oh, wouldn't it be cool to write a book on creativity? You've been working on this for about 20 years.
Well, yes, it's actually longer than that, because the roots of the creativity book were in my doctoral dissertation, which was on the feminine creative process, which I earned back in 1980.
Wow. So you've also beauty, metaphysics, spirituality, the leading edge here of vibrational research and raising our vibration for several decades. So we get a lot of wisdom and experience from reading your book, Your Creative Soul. Take a deep breath. I think that when you nurture creativity, you kind of pull everything else with it, your intelligence, your emotions, your health. It's kind of something, if you cut on that, everything else grows. You know, like a couple of things like integrity and values, if you expand that, everything else grows. But intelligence doesn't, you know, how educated you are doesn't necessarily expand you, but wisdom will. So creativity is one of those things, the more you know about it, the more you become conscious about it, it pulls up your vibration in all of your life. What do you think about that?
Well, that was, you've put it much more elegantly, actually, but that was one of the assertions that I ran across when I first started doing creativity research, is that if you research creativity, you will get more creative. And my problem with that at the time was that I didn't find the creativity research to be very creative. So I was a little confused about that assertion. And I really think that, you know, it's not studying creativity as an academic subject that really plugs you into creativity. It's being with your own creativity. It's learning how to connect with your creative soul. It's learning how to talk to your creative soul and listen. And then, you know, what's my particular unique way of expressing that creative energy? That's what just keeps expanding and expanding our creativity, is that active involvement with creativity and that willingness to challenge status quo, to push the boundaries, to ask the questions, what will happen if I do this?
Yeah, how
you know, I just finished a project. I don't have what I thought I was going to have at the end of the project, but what do I have?
You know, I think it's very interesting. If you ever have listened to used car salesmen, now that's some creativity. And if you've ever watched like a New York street cop directing traffic and they go do these elaborate dances, I mean, that's creativity. And if you've ever had a conversation with a difficult teen or a person who's difficult, that is using creativity. And like you said, most people wouldn't define that because it's not a material plane result as being creative. But when in your creative soul, you expand upon what is considered creative and have a person go deeper into the areas, even if they don't end up creating anything on the material, tangible plane. So I find that very, very interesting and something that I'm eager to learn more about, your creative self. So after the, we're going to go to the break in another 4 or 5 minutes, and what I would like to talk to you about is the complete idiot's guide to spirituality in the workplace. Oh, my God. You know, where do you start? Do you start at idiot and go to master, or do you start at master and go to idiot? Tell me about that.
Can I tell you the story about that book?
Sure. We've got 5 minutes till we go to the break.
Okay. I'll try to give you the condensed version. I had put out a, you know, a proposal with some chapters and chapter outlines, something like we do. And I think the title of it was Thriving in the Workplace. That was my title. And my agent had been shopping it around. And I came home one day, so it was evening, so I couldn't call my agent because she was out of her office. She was back east and I'm out west. So, and there's this message about how the Idiot's Guide want to publish this book. And I harumphed around the house, an Idiot's Guide indeed. Write an Idiot's Guide. I didn't realize I was such a snob, but you know, it all came out that evening. And so, you know, after a while of that, I began to see some humor in it. And then I began to realize that that was the whole point, that I've always said that we are closest to God when we are laughing. And I certainly know the connection between ha-ha and aha, and I was learning about that connection from ha-ha to aha to awe, and I swear I could hear God laughing as I was harumphing around the house. And then I realized that when you write an Idiot's Guide, people who pick that book up expect humor. And I thought, this is perfect. I get to use humor in a spirituality book. And I don't think that most people picking up a spirituality book expect humor.
Well,
they ought to, but we don't.
Spirituality is sometimes just too serious, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. So yeah, now I get to say I work for idiots, and I had a great time with that book. There's a definite format that they have, and it was one of the things that I had to do, and I thought, oh, brother, this is really going to be, you know, a pain in the tush, and I wasn't looking forward to that aspect of the format. So I thought, well, I'm not going to get that done with this kind of attitude, and I'm certainly, I mean, that sort of attitude just absolutely shuts off your creativity and the creative flow. So I, every time I had to do that part, I asked myself, how can I have fun with this? And that's a question that I've learned. I learned it then. To ask myself, if I'm running up against something where, you know, I feel as if it's kind of hard for me to get a hold of my creativity, or something really blocking me, I just ask, how can I have fun with this? Because when we adopt that attitude of fun, we really open up the channels of creative energy.
Well, one of my master teachers used to say that the most integrating energy on the planet is laughter. If you can do a serious class all day long, and if you can laugh at lunch or laugh at dinner, you're integrating it. But if you can't laugh during the educational and the assimilation process of it, you're not learning it. So just take a deep breath, people, and we're coming up to commercial break. And please call us with some questions. Our phone number is 646-716-9663.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
Okay, well, our engineer will interrupt us when we have a phone call. Now I want to talk about money. I see that you have co-authored and authored several books about money. Talk to me about money.
Well, you know, at its basic form, it's just another energy. And we put more ornaments, more beliefs, more emotion, more irrelevant energies onto the energy of money than I think any other thing in our culture. It's fascinating. It's astonishing what we do with it. And I'm guilty of doing it, too, because it's what we're brought up with. We really don't, as near as I can tell, and I've done enough past life stuff to feel confident in saying this, we don't typically come in with specific attitudes about money per se. We might have attitudes about the general concept of abundance or those sorts of things, but specific attitudes about money we learn. And most of the messages that women get, for example, about money are depowering messages. And that's that was one of the big efforts in both of those books, Our Money Ourselves, Redesigning Your Relationship with Money, and Our Money Ourselves for Couples. It was to empower people around money to realize that most of the beliefs that we've got are depowering. We give money power right and left.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that people say stupid things. Money doesn't climb trees. Rich people are cool. You know, they have all these things to say over and over again. And so you can't be rich because then you're going to be mean or you're going to step on everybody on the way up. And, you know, and you have all these beliefs that you have to work hard to earn money. And then you wonder why money comes to you. I believe that your relationship with money, it needs to be nurtured and cared for just like your relationship with any other person. One of my exercises that I give people is I have them take the largest denominator bill that they have, 50 or 100, and start having a relationship. And if we look at Benjamin Franklin, who's on a $100 bill, Benji usually hears crap like this. I need more of you. I got so many bills. If I break you, you're going to disappear quickly. And when I teach in my classes is take Benji and tell Benji the good stuff that's going on in your life and tell Benji the bad stuff that's going on in your life. Because if you get into this cycle with money and cash, where all you do is whine, complain, and beg for more, that the cycle, the energy of cash is going to go away from you. If you get into a relationship where you thank the phone company for trusting you for a month and the electricity company for trusting you to take a month's worth of electricity and knowing you will pay, thank you, phone company, and have a good relationship with money, then money is going to come easily to you. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not going to appear. You still have to take action steps, do your work to get it. But a relationship with money is something that we're not taught to have in this society.
I absolutely agree with you, Star. Absolutely. Yeah, that relationship with money is extremely important. When my co-author, Kailash, and I began putting the money books together, we have been doing workshops on the topics. And that's where it grew from. And I also was doing, we did an extensive survey of women all over the country, because our focus was on women at the time. And one of our questions on that survey was, what kind of a relationship would you like to have with money? And quite a number of women, I don't remember the percentage now, but quite a number of them said, I don't want any relationship with it.
Well, that's kind of sad, isn't it?
It's very sad. It's very sad.
It's you're going to have, you live on this planet Earth, you came into these worlds.
Right.
Money
right.
is one of the things we survive by, have fun by lectures. You can't disown it, like you can't disown your body. You
right.
know, so
right.
it's better to educate yourself about money. It's better to see where your belief systems push against the relationship of money to you, and to get your vibration to a place where you can attract the appropriate and abundant amounts of cash for the energy that you extend. And it's just some people, watch yourself. What do you do when you go into a 7-Eleven? Do you throw that money down on the counter for the cashier to pick? I can tell you, if you opened your wallet to me and I saw napkins, sugar packets, receipts, condoms stuffed in between your money and your wallet was all ugly, I can tell you what your relationship is with money.
Mm-hmm.
If your money is neatly placed in your wallet and you hand somebody the money and actually wait for them to take it, that's, I can tell how much respect you have for that, you know? You should know, for the dollar, more or less, how much money is in your purse or wallet. You know, I can be $4 or $5 off sometime, but I pretty much am very aware of that. And they don't know what they have in their checking account. They don't know how much money they have in their purse. Just get behind somebody like that in a toll booth someday. So
I was astonished when I was in psychotherapy practice how many other therapists that I knew had no idea how much money they made.
Isn't that always strange?
And well, I thought it was very strange.
And the other thing that always just kind of pissed me off, when I would ask a woman, how much are you and your husband making? She says, oh, I don't know. I just signed the tax returns. I said, don't you even look?
Yeah.
They're like, no. And how much money do you have? I don't know. How much debt do you have? I don't know. And you want to be wealthy. You want to be healthy. You need to know the framework, the bases, the skeletons, the muscles, just like with creativity. What are the muscles to stretch? What muscles
right.
to... So I think writing a couple books on money and teaching these workshops must have changed your relationship with money. And did it help you a lot to do this work as the teacher and the author?
Oh, I think it did. You know, I'm like a lot of people out there that I, as I've discovered, where I got very mixed messages about money in my family. I got one kind of message from my father and a whole, you know, 180 shift message from my mother. And trying to make sense out of those two messages has been really, really confusing. And, so working on those, identifying the messages that I've been carrying around, getting distance from those messages, and just building my own belief system then around money has made some pretty drastic changes for me. I'm still a work in progress.
Aren't we all?
Right, yes.
Uh-huh. So I think one thing that I was taught, raise my income by about 10 to 15%, and someone once told me, give what you want to receive. So I start giving some clients to other people. I start tipping wow, extra wow for extra good service. I start tithing more. You know, people would tell me, I would get a good haircut, and they'd say, oh, the haircut's $40. And I say, no, to me it's worth $50. And I blow people's cash paradigms and my own by paying for the service I got and not what they charged, which And within a period of, oh, I don't know, 4 months of this, my income went up 10 to 15%. Because I'm a Capricorn, and I keep those details, you know how Capricorns are, down to the last, you know, who gave me this referral, where did it come from, and what color was it when it got to the front door, you know? So I think giving what you want to get was the most, biggest percent change paradigm for me about money. And people say stupid stuff like, I can't afford to tithe.
Mm-hmm.
And I say stuff like, you can't afford not to. You know, you want money. People say to me, I never go to any other practitioners. And I say, every town I go into, I buy something in the bookstore, crystal store, whatever store, metaphysical store it is, I support them, and I go get a healing or a session. You know, now I'm on my second of 200th astrology reading and, you know, 300 massage. But you have to support your community if you want support.
Mm-hmm.
You have to spend that money, and people don't get that. When you put your hands over a pile of money, nothing gets out, but nothing
gets in. Right.
So,
it's that energy form, and the tighter you hang on to your own energy, it can't move. It can't do what it's supposed to do. It can't do what it's designed to do.
So let's mix up your two topics. Take your two topics. Your book, Your Creative Soul, and Creativity and Money. So how do we get creative around money?
Well, there are some very interesting things that are happening these days. I think this economic crash that we've just lived through and are still living through to some degree, that really seems to have shifted a lot of people's beliefs about money and the role that money has in their lives. Because I see people taking money down some notches in terms of, you know, giving it so much power over their lives. They're taking some of their power back about that and saying, well, you know, maybe my happiness isn't defined by how big my house is or what kind of car I'm driving or all that material stuff. And I'm thinking family is a lot more important than being a workaholic. So I see some things like that happening that I think are going to really make some important changes and shifts here.
I think I found a recent Harvard study that said that people are now no longer buying the big yacht, the newer car, the diamond ring, that they're paying for experiences like hiking in the Sierra Nevadas, like, you know, going to a workshop. They're not buying things as much with their money, but buying experiences. And I thought that was a very interesting study. And I thought about it in my life, whether I've bought things or experiences. And I noticed that some of the spiritual, metaphysical people were already there 20 years ago, where they valued the experience that a teacher could give them, the experience of going someplace, sitting in a pyramid or at Stonehenge or Machu Picchu could give you. But now middle America is going there, and I'm like, oh, that's a real good place to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's happening is that people are realizing how much of a place they're in of disconnect. And because the more things we put around us, typically, the more disconnected we are from other people, from the earth, from other life. And so when you talk about these experiences, I think that's what people are doing is you're going for the connection. You go to a place like Machu Picchu, and I mean the connection that you can get there is profound. It changes you.
It does. It does, and that's why I think in my life I spent 16 years living in 13 different countries with different masters. I work a little bit and go stay someplace. What is the name of your new book again, and where can I buy it?
The name of the new book is Your Creative Soul, and you can buy it through my website, which is Diane, D-I-A-N-E, Ely, E-A-L-Y, the double E. So it's at cdianeely.com. Or you can go to the publisher's website, and that's gatherinsight.com.
Who also happens to publish several of my books. What a great company, Gather Insight. And Jay
Lee, amazing.
Absolutely brilliant. So if any of you spiritual people out there have books that are written, please go to gatherinsight.com and leave a message for Jaylene. And she will assist you in any way possible with your book. Tell you it's what and horrible, awful, or tell you it's wonderful, ecstatic, great. Do you do private appointments?
I do, yes.
Tell me what those are like.
Well, I do several different kinds of work. I do the physiohellenics energy healing that we were talking about earlier. I do that at a distance, as well as one-on-one. I do something called soul memory discovery, which is quite amazing work. It is not, it is not work I developed. It's work that I learned because of the effects that I felt after having had a session. And they were profound, immediate profound. I mean, it was amazing. So that I do soul memory discovery sessions as well, and those can be done at a distance as well as one-on-one. I also do, and Jaylene Clark, who is one of the co-owners of Gather Insight, and I do, we will do a session together with a person. And it's the kind of session that we never quite know where it's going to go. What it really does is it helps a person to have a place of safety where they can explore what it is they want to explore. And if there are issues involved, get resolution to those issues, get healing on those issues, simply transcend the issue, whatever is appropriate.
And I imagine it involves some creative stimulation or creative direction, how to take your creative energies also.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, when someone comes to me, most of the time people who come to me are really wanting to create and recreate their own lives. And that's typically what's underneath everything that I do, and I just have different techniques for doing that with people.
Well, different people, you can't lead all the people the same way, and I've got a huge toolbox of 60-some certifications, and, I can't plan anything. When I get into that appointment or a session with a person, the energy just starts moving, and I follow it, and then whatever is appropriate comes up. So
right.
I'm kind of questionable about somebody who only wants to do one thing during the session and doesn't have this full spectrum background like you do. You know, you work with women, you work with money, you work with the Idiot's Guide to Spirituality in the workplace, with business. And I find that when I talk to people who are teachers, people who are healers, the more spectrums they have, the education, the better the je ne sais quoi quality of my appointment is. And I do some work called Archaeology of the Soul and then Ecology of the Soul, which probably you and I need to sit down sometime and I need to go over what I do with you, because it's a tangent to what you do. Not necessarily the same thing, but when I have a piece in the new mentors program that I am doing, and it's looking at the mentors and the mentees' ecology of their soul, what this lifetime they've developed, what they avoided, you know, what's going on in that environment versus in their mind or in their heart. And it's really amazing. Your mind will tell you one thing, your heart will tell you another, yet your intuition, or as some people call it, your gut, will mostly speak for your connection and your soul. So I'm really looking forward to working with your book, Your Creative Soul, which can be purchased at gatherinsight.com. We're coming up to the last 7 or 8 minutes of our show. What do you think was the most important metaphysical, spiritual thing you learned in your life, and can you share it with us?
What a terrific question. Because I can, you know, several things pop into my head all at once. I'm not really sure that I could pick one. But I can pick an accumulation. One of the most important things happened when I was, let's see, how old are you when you're in about 6th or 7th grade? It was about, you know, 11 or 12, somewhere in there. And I was upset about some actions that a particular religious group was taking with regard to civil rights. And I was talking to my mother about it, and she looked at me and she said, "Diane," she said, "don't ever confuse religion with spirituality." And that was one of the most important spiritual moments for me of my life. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And so I never have confused those two.
Right.
And that's really an important place to be, because I've worked with so many people who do confuse them. And as a result of rejecting religion, they've also rejected their spirituality.
And it's like you talk maybe about with the bathwater, you know?
Right, exactly. That's exactly what they've done. So that was a very important moment for me. I also had, and this was quite a few years ago, because it was before the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross work came out on near-death experiences. And I had a near-death experience, but it was in a meditative state.
Oh, boy.
And when I went into the light, because I did go into the light, I'm a very curious person, so I right away said, when I went into the light, I heard a voice that said, "This is what your death will be like." I was, oh, okay, well, this is all right. And so in that moment, I think any fear of death left, and I think that's an important place to be, because you can't really live if you're afraid of dying. And then I said, can I go to the other side? And again, the voice said, but you'll have to change form. So, can I get this form back, this body form back? Because they knew it wasn't my time to leave. And they said, yes. So I went through to the other side, and was greeted by, I have no idea how many thousands and thousands of other small balls of light that became pure energy. And it was such a remarkable experience because there was total pure communication, one energy ball to the other. We knew we were all connected, all those sorts of things. And that was a profound experience for me, too. It changed my reality here on Earth after I came back. And that was in the mid-70s when that happened. So those are the two experiences that come to the forefront for me in terms of having some pretty significant influence on how I experience myself as a spiritual being and how I experience other people as spiritual beings, as well as my cats, of course.
Now, people, I have a spiritual organization called Divine Intervention. I have this great big 600 ram foot geodesic dome. People say, I don't want to come to church. And I say, come for a spiritual experience. And they go, oh, okay. And 6 weeks, 6 months later, they show up. And they go, wow, that's nothing like church. And I said, no, it's nothing like that. Word religion and church to them, you know, means a certain type of service, the way you have to connect through the ministry to God, and what I nurture is them connecting to Source themselves. And, of course, you know, no preaching fire and brimstone. It's all techniques, how to improve yourself, and, you know, food for thought. And people are like, wow, this is nothing like church. So, you know, people don't go to churches, even spiritual churches, because of the erroneous belief that it's going to be religious. And
right.
I think people gathering together to honor Source, to honor what we all want is very important. And you can do this in a forest, you can do this in a building, but you have to be encouraged to connect to God yourself. You don't connect through the minister or the bishop or the pope. You connect to God's. Your connection is with God, and hey, you know, your minister can show you a map. They can tell you, here's another way to connect, and, oh, that path's a little stony, and this path's a little, you know, a little bit easier. So when you get a chance, people, I want you to read Your Creative Soul. And now, not when you get a chance. Read it now. You can get it at gatherinsight.com. It's by C, period. Diane Ealy, E-A-L-Y. And you can find that website of hers. She's authored 5 books. She does appointments. She has her own healing technique. What a full-spectrum person to connect with to have an appointment. And, of course, there's me. I do appointments on many different things. I have a website that goes on for pages and pages. And if you get tired of reading that website, I have another website. So I'll connect you to another website. Find me starting next month again on stageit.com on Mondays, where you actually get to see a video of me live teaching you something. It's a wonderful way to be.